This show is not intended for the politically correct or the close-minded. Enter at the risk of opening your eyes. You have been warned.
Why does the media attack an issue? To get primetime ratings?
In my line of work, you got to keep repeating things over and over and over again for the truth to sink in.
The Army Air Forces has announced that a flying disc has been found and is now in the possession of the Army.
A moment comes when we step out from the old to the new, and when the soul of a nation, long suppressed, finds utterance.
Kind of catapult the propaganda.
You are listening to Open Eyes with your host, Ira Robinson. From the normal to the paranormal, from government cover-ups to the depths of our consciousness, we aim to explore all things. From the dawn of prehistory to current events, no topic is forbidden and nothing remains hidden.
No more secrets.
Open your eyes and open your mind to the fact that life as we know it is not as we have been taught. Join us at latenightinthemidlands.com or openeyesnetwork.com as we take this brief journey through the depths of the cosmos and explore what it really means to be human.
Many peoples have sacrificed their liberties only to learn to their sorrow that deceit and mockery, poverty and tyranny are their reward.
Whether you're online or offline, intercontinental or intergalactic, hello and welcome to Open Eyes. Today is Monday, April 20th, 2015, and boy, I got it right for once. I didn't even have to stop and think about it. And now I've called the attention out to all the mistakes that I've made in the past, right? So, hello there. My name is Ira Robinson, and I'd like to welcome you guys to another edition of Open Eyes. Hopefully, you guys are going to get a lot out of this one. I have a topic in mind that sort of got brought up on accident to me. And I was originally going to cover the topic of patriotism and some of the other isms that are related to it. And I might get to it in today's episode. I'm not sure yet if I'm going to have the time to get to it as fully as I would like to. But again, this is how live radio sort of works. Sometimes you get hit with an idea that you're like, okay, I got to hit this while the iron is hot, or I've got to hit this while the idea of it is fresh in my mind. And sometimes that means that the topics that you originally wanted to talk about have to be moved to another day. So if I don't cover the patriotism thing today, I'll get to it on Wednesday, April 22nd, 2015. But either way, hello and welcome to Open Eyes. So the main topic that I want to talk about tonight is the brain and some of the things that occur with it that we don't really realize. We sort of take it for granted, and we don't realize that our brain actually functions in ways that we would actually prefer it not to do. But because of the way that we have adapted and evolved, it sort of works out that way. So I'll get to that after the first break. So before we hit that topic, I, as always, have some news that I would like to cover with you guys. And the first bit of news actually has to do with the network. So as you who are longtime listeners of me know, we've done a lot of different transitions over the past year, and we have moved actually quite a bit over onto the Late Night in the Midlands radio network, the L&M radio network. And so basically because of that, we have, I've become basically the program director over there, general manager, however you want to put it, and been helping out a lot with the network over there. And so I wanted to bring a little bit of network news to you guys. We actually have been now in talks with a couple of different shows, and as of this week, we're starting to add them fully into the schedule. So the new shows essentially are The Real World with Steve Miller, not the musician, but definitely just as fabulous to listen to. That is on at 6 a.m. and 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 5 a.m., 5 p.m. Central Time. And then at 10 o'clock a.m. Eastern Standard Time, we're now going to be broadcasting Tough Reality with Mike Amsiger. And it's an interesting show. It's one that actually was on the L&M Radio Network when it was still on Blog Talk, and now it's coming back. For the moment, it's going to be pre-recorded, much like my shows are, and just kind of broadcast out on the network. But eventually, and we're hoping within the next couple of weeks, he's going to do his show live, and we'll be taking call-ins from people that are listening on the network. So again, that'll be at 10 o'clock in the morning, Eastern Standard Time, and definitely tune in. It's a really good show. He's actually from China, so he's kind of behind the Great Firewall, so to speak, and touching on some news that you guys may not have heard, because we don't get a lot of information sometimes out of China. So it's kind of interesting to have a boots on the ground approach to this set of topics. So definitely be sure to tune in. So that's it as far as the network news is concerned. Everything's been going really well. We're really happy with how things have been working out so far. And hopefully you guys have been getting as much enjoyment out of it as we have been doing it. And keep tuning in, definitely. We're now available actually on TuneIn, iTunes, the network itself, the network page itself at latenightinthemidlands.com. You can listen to it on my page. If you go to openeyesnetwork.com, there's a big blinking listen live button that you can't miss. Just click on that and the player should start playing automatically. And we're available now 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. My archives are on my website as always, so openeyesnetwork.com. Every episode that I put out, I put into my archives there. They're available to listen. And of course, I'm available on iTunes as well. Definitely, if you want to get the latest episodes all the time, go to iTunes and subscribe to my stream there. And in the meantime, keep listening. That's all I can say. So on to news of the world. This first story I thought was really, really important, because this goes into a topic that I talk about frequently, and it's one that I feel is really essential to make sure that people hear and understand. This is a very dangerous precedent. Let me just put it to you that way. So, a judge has now ordered that a 10-year-old girl has to be vaccinated for measles against her mother's wishes. The mother had plenty of arguments as to why her 10-year-old daughter should not receive the measles vaccine, ranging from most diseases today are very rare to unmistakable links between vaccines and severe reactions. The problem is, Branford Superior Court Justice R. Harper wasn't buying any of it. He recently ruled that the girl, whose identity is protected by a publication ban, be given a vaccination for measles, mumps, and rubella, or whatever else her family doctor recommends, prior to her trip to Germany later this month to visit extended family. By ruling that vaccination is in the best interests of the child, Harper was siding with the girl's father, who is separated from the mother and shares joint custody, as well as with the overwhelming scientific evidence that has been proven the effectiveness and extremely low risk of the measles vaccine. Harper wrote, "The parents are at the extreme end of high conflict, and their positions relative to the issue of vaccinations is equally polarized. The April 10th decision comes amid a recent measles outbreak that swept through North America, including Ontario, which Harper acknowledged is at the center of the controversy before this court. The case shows the court's this is a quote from, Amir Attaran, who is a law and medicine professor at the University of Ottawa. He said, "This case shows the courts sensibly disdain those with a blind spot for science, whether it be denying the vaccines work or denying that the earth is round." Okay. So, guys, in this little article here, which comes off of Yahoo, if I remember correctly, it essentially hits on 3 points. Number one, we have the propaganda about vaccinations itself. As you could read in the article itself, that they're citing with overwhelming scientific evidence that has proven the effectiveness and extremely low risk of the measles vaccine. I'm calling bull crap right here and right now. Listen, people, how many times do I have to say on my show over and over and over again, the vaccinations do not work. They do not do what the science says that they do. It is all a lie. It has been proven over and over again that vaccines are linked to extreme issues, extreme problems, and the courts themselves have ruled as such over and over again. The vaccines are not what they claim that they are, and they can claim all that they want that the science has settled regarding vaccines. But the truth is far from proven. The truth is far from that. Okay, so then they throw in the fact that anybody who denies vaccines in this propaganda hit piece, anybody who denies vaccines is also a flat earther. So you see how they congeal everybody together. They throw everybody into the crazy mix. No matter what your position is, no matter what you might stand for, if you stand against the mainstream in any way, you're no different than those who deny that the earth is round, or that the sun is up in the sky, or that Jesus Christ is coming again. I mean, this is what it all comes down to, guys. It's propaganda. 100%. So this case, with a judge ruling that a vaccine has to be mandatory, opens the doors for all vaccines to become mandatory on all people. That's what it comes down to. This is a precedent that is set with it all. And this is bad. This is not at all good. It is not an altruistic thing. It's dangerous. Okay. I'm just going to put it to you that way. And I could be cussing up a storm right now, and I'm really trying to prevent myself from doing so because I don't need to do that on this show. But you guys get the idea that there has been a lot of scientific evidence that has shown that the vaccines are not what they claim that they are. And you could go into my archives on my shows at openeyesnetwork.com. Look at the topics that I have there. I have a drop down menu right there on the front page. You can't miss it. Topics. If you go into the topics, you're going to see vaccinations listed there. And that will bring you to all the episodes that I have done in regards to vaccines and the vaccine issues. In each of those show notes for those shows, I have links to multiple studies proving the vaccinations are an issue. And you guys can go there, do the research for yourself, and find out for yourself that this propaganda piece that I just read to you is nothing but a lie. That it is nothing but true propaganda, 100%. They're not hitting you with the truth with this stuff. Go and do the research yourself. And if you don't believe the studies that I've put up on my website, and you want to keep denying that there's anything wrong with these things, you know, if you want to keep denying that there isn't a problem here, then that is your prerogative. But stop following the path that people are trying to lead you down. Do the research for yourself and find out the truth. That's what I advocate all the time with this show and with any show that I'm on. Do the research yourself. Don't just follow the party line. That's where we get into trouble. So in the next story, Norway in 2017 will be the first country to shut down FM radio. Nor will you be shutting down FM radio in the country beginning in 2017, radio.no reports. The Norwegian Ministry of Culture finalized a shift date this week, making it the first country to do away with FM radio entirely. The country plans to transition to digital audio broadcasting, or DAB, as a national standard. A statement released this week by the Ministry of Culture confirms a switch-off date that was proposed by the Norwegian government back in 2011. The government has concluded that the country is capable of meeting all the requirements necessary for the smooth transition to digital. A quote from the Minister of Culture, Thorhild Widvey: "Listeners will have access to more diverse and pluralistic radio content and enjoy better sound quality and new functionality. Digitization will also greatly improve the emergency preparedness system, facilitate increased competition, and offer new opportunities for innovation and development. DAB currently offers 22 national channels as opposed to FM's 5, and has the capacity to host almost 20 more. The cost of transmitting radio channels through FM is also 8 times higher than the cost of DAB transmission, at least according to the ministry." So, Norway is, I guess you could say, leading the way into new technologies. And this is a little bit concerning, because when you see what happened here in America, when we moved away from the analog signals on television, for instance, and went fully digital, what happened? Well, that opened the door to having even more surveillance being done. It opened the door to have more programming being done, and I don't mean television programming. I mean television programming, the programming that happens in your brain, the ability for them to put different signals through the transmitters easier is there. So with this switchover from FM to completely digital, it leads the way to some very large issues that can end up occurring. Now, we'll see as the time gets closer what'll happen with it all, but it's something that I'm paying attention to, because if it's happening there, you can look at it as being a beta test for things that'll go on here in America and in all of Europe, really. But I know that this is something that they've really been pushing for in America for a while now, but they have been getting a lot of pushback against it from the FM broadcasters, which here have still a lot of say. There's a lot of money that's involved in the whole business, so they're able to kind of toss out more monetary deterrence for that type of thing to actually start occurring. So, you know, again, it's something that I'm going to be paying attention to. We'll see what ends up happening with it, but it does raise a few red flags in my mind. In another weird story, I bring these to you once in a while. Eating eggs in a different way has nutritional benefits that are extra than you would expect. While the egg yolk debate to eat or not to eat may continue among doctors, nutritionists, and others in the health industry, researchers from Purdue University are giving the whole egg the thumbs up. In fact, they've discovered that eggs consumed with raw vegetables can actually increase the nutritional value of the vegetables. This study, which was presented earlier this month at the American Society for Nutrition's annual meeting, consisted of 16 healthy young men who were instructed to eat 3 different salads, one with no egg, one with 1.5 scrambled whole eggs, and another with 3 scrambled whole eggs. And what we observed is that there was a progressive increase in the absorption of carotenoids from the vegetables as you had more eggs, which we attribute to the fat component of the yolk. That was according to lead study author Wayne Campbell, PhD, a professor of nutritional science at Purdue University. So this is one of those weird stories that makes you shake your head. Who'd have thunk that eating eggs would add to the nutritional content of any vegetables that you eat? Duh. You're eating, you're consuming something that has a nutritional benefit. So, of course, it's going to add to the nutritive value of the vegetables. Now, yes, I get the point of what they're trying to say with it all, but come on. Did they really need to have a study to determine that eating eggs in your salad is healthier than just eating the salad? Is going to add more nutritive value than just eating the salad? Come on. What an asinine study, you know, that what a waste of money. and you know, this again, they touch into what I've talked about before with the way that the health industry works a lot of times, where they will come out with a study that's done and they'll say, oh, well, eggs are good for you. You should eat the eggs. No, eggs are bad for you. Don't eat the eggs. They're horrible for you. Get away from eggs. Don't ever eat them again. Okay, well, the eggs are okay, but don't eat the whites. The whites are bad. The yolks are the only good part. Just eat the yolks. Okay, well, no, the yolks are bad. Just eat the whites. The whites are the good part. Just stick with those, and you're going to be fine. Look, they don't know what they're talking about. They pull this stuff out of their butts on a constant basis, okay? Just like with the vaccine debate, just like with all the global warming, climate change crap, it's all pulled out of their butt. And it's in a way that they use to follow the money every single time. If you do the Ki Bono, if you follow the money, you know, who benefits, you're going to see that the studies that are done with these things are actually done at the behest of the companies who would be getting the most benefit out of these studies having a positive effect, you see. It's just the way it goes. It's been done for years, and it's really a form of propaganda. It's the expert style propaganda where they'll pull studies out of their butts, and it gives it more street credit or more affirmation essentially that in the people's minds, because, oh, well, see, we have a study here that says that eating eggs with your salad is good for you. I wouldn't be surprised if this study was put on by the egg industry. That's generally how it works. So, Deputy Secretary of Defense Bob Work underscored growing concerns about potential threats to key military and intelligence satellites and said that the U.S. government needed innovative and integrated ways to respond to any such attacks. Work told a classified session at the annual Space Symposium conference that space assets were absolutely critical to the U.S. military's ability to operate and fight future wars, and the Pentagon would take action to defend those assets, according to his spokeswoman, Lieutenant Commander Courtney Hilson. Work said government and industry needed to work together to find innovative ways to protect satellites and the networks used to operate them. According to her, we depend on space for everything from space-based communications to intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance to positioning, navigation, and timing. This was what was told at this meeting, which held 200 military and industry executives. Sorry, it's been a night. Work also said that it was important to emphasize control of space assets as challenges arose, and that the U.S. government needed to respond in an integrated and coordinated manner if an adversary targeted those systems and capabilities. Now, in a side note with it, Admiral James Winnefeld told Reuters last month that the U.S. military was taking a broader look at the overall issue of space control, but provided no further details. So this is, I think, an important story because this shows like where they're leading us in the future, that this type of thinking is going to be the next stage of war. They started trying to do this back during the 1980s with the whole Star Wars program, the SDI, you know, the Space Defense Initiative and all of the stuff that went along with it. And what we see happening now is the new push for it. You know, we just had not too long ago, there was the satellite that literally just exploded out of nowhere for no reason. And then this kind of meeting takes place. Now, they claimed that there was a malfunction on the satellite, but, you know, given the timing of things, given that this was just, what, maybe a month ago, and now this meeting takes place that, oh, well, we have to defend our satellites and blah, blah, blah. There's a tie there. There's definitely a correlation between the two. And that, I think, is really important to pay attention to. So those stories will be linked up on our website on the show notes for this show. You can find them at openeyesnetwork.com/OE096. And take a look at them, because I think that they're really important to look at. So, guys, we'll be back in just a few minutes. We're going to take a break here. And when we come back, I'm going to get into my main topic, which is the brain. So hopefully you guys will have your brains ready to absorb some really good and interesting information. Stick around. We'll be back in just a few minutes. You're listening to Open Eyes.
Open Eyes looks for the truth in all things, no matter where it may lead. Whether it is the paranormal, government cover-ups, the dark agenda that the puppet masters are bringing to this world, or aliens and UFOs, no subject is taboo or off-limits. Listen to Open Eyes Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays on the LNM Network at latenightinthemidlands.com or openeyesnetwork.com, starting at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Open hearts, open minds, open eyes.
The LNM Radio Network and Late Night in the Midlands depends on you, the listener. Without you, there would be no us. So help us continue to bring you the best guests with the best information and subscribe today. Information on becoming an LNM subscriber can be found at the top of latenightinthemidlands.com. Just click the About Subscriptions tab and become part of the family while helping the truth stay alive. And while you're at it, maybe subscriptions aren't for you. A one-time donation helps as well. Click that donate button on the right side of latenightinthemidlands.com and help us help you.
Transmission.
So I'll admit it, I'm a geek. I love anything science fiction or fantasy. I love to collect things that are related to the things that I like. There's a place that I go to find unique things. It's an Etsy shop that's called The Geeky Stitcher. They have some amazing and one-of-a-kind handcrafted collectibles on a lot of my favorite science fiction and fantasy-related shows and movies. You know, geek stuff. They have things like gloves that look just like the TARDIS from Doctor Who. They have crocheted figures from Star Trek, Disney movies, even Navi from The Legend of Zelda. They're all made with love. And they have a unique style, and best of all, they're cheaply priced. They'll even do custom orders. All you have to do is let them know what you would like to see made, and they'll get right on it. Check them out today at thegeekystitcher.etsy.com, or you can also go to their Facebook fan page, which is found at The Geeky Stitcher. Go there today. I'm sure you guys will find something that you would really, really love. The mainstream media says,
"You can't handle the truth."
But here at Late Night in the Midlands Radio Network, it's all truth, all the time.
At The Secret Teachings, we are not a part of any group, label, and we do not attempt to fearmonger. Some of the topics we discuss may seem scary, so I advise you not to be afraid, but to be informed as we discuss current events and ancient history, astrotheology and symbolism, the paranormal and the occult, the esoteric, health, and much more. I am not here to tell you that what I say is truth, but to allow you to decide for yourself based on the evidence presented and the dots connected. Information is not negative. It is how you view it that determines the dimensional characteristics of either dual aspect of negativity or positivity. Try as you might, but no amount of disinformation, propaganda, rhetoric, or trolling will change the truth. The truth is the truth, regardless if the mass is accepted as is, or if it is accepted by only one out of billions. It is no measure of health to be well adjusted to a profoundly sick society. For more information on airtimes and free downloads of past episodes of The Secret Teachings, you can visit www.thesecretteachings.info. That's thesecretteachings.info.
Well, hello there, everybody. Welcome back to Open Eyes. My name is Ira Robinson, and I want to thank you guys for sticking around through that break with me. I know sometimes the breaks are a little long, and sometimes they're a bit of a pain in the butt, but, you know, we got to pay our bills, right? Wait a minute. What bills? Oh, yeah, those bills. Yeah, anyway, so... gives you guys a chance to kind of refresh your minds, go take a pee, go take a coffee break, whatever you want to say, and come back and hopefully fill your mind with some information that can be used. So tonight's topic is the brain and some of the funny things that are related to it. And I don't necessarily mean funny as in funny, haha, but I mean funny as in funny, weird. This topic was one that, I guess kind of, like I said, came about by accident. It's one that I didn't really intend to talk about tonight, but I thought, well, it's something that has to be said because, you know, most people don't really think about how the brain works, how it operates, what goes on in the, mysterious ways that it functions. Even scientists don't have a clue. They still don't, no matter how much they try to claim that they do. They don't know what the mind is. They don't know how it functions. They know that we have a brain, but they don't know really what, you know, what component equals what and all of this kind of stuff. They might have an overview of it. They might have a good idea, but they don't really know, not for sure. They certainly don't understand consciousness, no matter how much they try to claim otherwise. And it's because of the brain that I have a, well, you know, I guess I have a deep interest in the topic because of the experiences that I've gone through in my life, the consciousness expanding things that I've done in my life, the people that I've talked to and touched over the years. It really has brought me to a deep curiosity about what consciousness is, what the brain is, what the mind is, how they all interact together, how they all affect us on a daily basis. And it's especially true in relation to my son. Now, some of you out there, my long-term listeners, you guys kind of know the background of the story with my son, but I'll go ahead and give a nutshell overview here for those of you who might be new to the show, which I know that we get new listeners all the time. So it's important to touch on old subjects. My son, whose name is Seth, is right now 13 years old as of the time of this recording. He's going to actually be 14 in about a month or so. And when he was young, he was completely what would be classed as normal. He was actually above average in the way that he did things and in the timing of things. He started walking really early, started talking really early, fed himself really early, so on and so forth. He was potty trained, everything. And then one day we got him his MMR vaccine, and very rapidly things fell apart. And when I mean fall apart, I mean in the most dramatic ways that you can imagine. We watched this above average little boy at 3 years old, basically, you know, 2.5 to 3 years old, go from this bright spark of joy to losing everything. And I mean everything. He lost the ability to speak, lost the ability to really feed himself, lost his potty training, lost his ability to walk. He could no longer manipulate small objects. Everything was gone. And we were left with a child who was essentially a newborn infant at 3 years old. And people might poo-poo my idea that it's related to the vaccines, but to those people, I say, shut up until you've gone through it yourself. You have no clue. We saw this happen firsthand, and we saw that it happened within a matter of weeks after getting the vaccine. Everything started to fall apart. And this is not a solitary story. This story that I'm telling is not a unique story. There are many children who are deeply impacted by these things. At this point in time, he has been diagnosed, and of course he was diagnosed a long time ago, with autism, severe autism. Specifically on the autism scale, he has what is called childhood disintegrative disorder. And this is a very deeply devastating version of autism. It's one of the rare types, thankfully. I am glad that there are not many parents that have to go through this, but essentially what it comes down to is that with the type that he has, he will progress forward in certain things, but if it's not constantly, and I mean continuously reinforced, sometimes every day, he will lose whatever he has learned. And he basically cannot keep hold of any kind of things unless it has been reinforced. And I liken it basically to him holding all of his abilities, all of his memories, all of his ability to speak and walk and talk, everything is sort of like holding grains of sand in your hand and the wind is constantly blowing. You have only so much in your hand and the wind keeps trying to blow it away and you constantly bend down to try to pick it up. But each time that you pick it up, it's in a different configuration. It's no longer the same structure that it had. So that's essentially how his brain works. And what brought this topic up to my mind tonight is over the past couple of days, he has had a hard time. He's had a difficult time because he's been going through meltdowns. That's literally what it's termed, meltdowns. They've started out with various reasons. You know, there's never really a reason for the meltdowns. They just sort of happen. There's not really necessarily a trigger point for them. It's more like there's a buildup of things in the brain, you know, in the mind, in the senses, and they get to the point where there is so much that they have to go through a meltdown in order to sort of hit a reset switch or a reset button in the mind, or maybe like a steam release valve or something like that. The meltdown essentially makes it so that they have the capability of getting back into being a balanced person again. It's not that way with all of them, of course, but in our specific case and in others that I've known, that's pretty much how it's worked out. So that's the meltdown situation. Now, as I said, he's had a couple of them over the past few days. And one of the things that leads to the meltdowns is the senses and what happens with the senses with an autistic person. So with an autistic person, a lot of times, and this is, again, I'm using, you know, that as a blanket statement. It's not this way with all people who have autism. I've heard of other various stories that have gone on, but, you know, kind of as an overview or by and large, what ends up occurring is the child, the person, you know, I speak in child terms because, you know, a lot of autistic children out there, a lot of our autistic people out there, especially the ones who are severely autistic, they're very childlike. They've still kind of been stuck in that young mode of operation, basically. But what ends up occurring is they get very overstimulated very easily. And it's through the senses that this happens. There's a sensory overload that ends up occurring. One other problem that I have seen as far as autistic people are concerned is that, and it's not necessarily a problem, I mean, you know, but one other issue that ends up occurring is that when they feel emotions, they feel it all the way, especially with our son. If he's happy, everybody's happy. He's just spreading joy like crazy. But if he's angry or if he's upset or if he's sad or anything along those lines, it's as much anger, sadness, happiness, love. It's as much as it can possibly be. It is the strongest that you could imagine. And it's just, it hits you like a wave. Just wham, it's huge, okay? That's how he is. And I know every other autistic person that I've ever encountered seems to be exactly the same way. So I don't know if it's, you know, if you have an autistic person in your family or something like that, if it's this way with them as well. But I'm willing to bet that it is, because it seems to be this way with all of them that I've ever encountered. And that is not necessarily a bad thing. I mean, of course, when it comes to the negative emotions, it can be very difficult to handle. But, you know, when they're in that happy mode, man, it is just so much happy. You can't help but smile and be joyful around them as well. One other thing that I've noticed when it comes to people with autism is that, especially the severely autistic, when we go through life as a human being, when we go through our lives, everything that we do, everything that we've experienced, all of the things that we've gone through, all of these things, they cause a filter to be placed over our brain. Everything that we do is looked at through that filter of our past experiences. So, you know, when you look at a frozen food dinner sitting in the freezer, you're not just looking at that through your eyes. You're looking at that through all of the past experiences that you've ever had from the moment of your conception on. Unless you've done something to erase any of those or whatever, you know, it really is that way. So with autistic people, what I've noticed is that there is a decided lack of that filter. It's more like the filter is out of control, you know, if you want to put it that way. And in a lot of cases, there is no filter there at all. It's just raw. Everything is completely raw, naked there, right? What I've seen as well is that when you look at the memories of a person who's severely autistic, the memories work in a weird way. Normally, people, when you think of a memory, you kind of get this almost a movie being played in your mind. And you understand the context of the movie. You understand what is going on in the movie. You know who the characters are. You know the basic storyline of it, you know. And then you watch the movie in your mind and you see, okay, well, Aunt Myrtle, you know, tripped over the birthday cake and she fell down and landed on her face, okay? Well, that's how normally memories work. You can bring that memory up in your mind and say, oh yeah, I remember when that happened and she did this and this and this. And you can tell the whole story, point A to point Z, of that event. With someone who is severely autistic, a lot of times, and this is definitely the way it is with our kiddo, and it's this way with a lot of others that I've met, the memories are more like they're looking through a scrapbook that belongs to somebody else. They don't have any idea who this person is in the picture. All they see is a person who has apparently tripped over a birthday cake and now has cake all over their face. But they don't have any real association with the person. They don't remember the event that ended up happening. All they see is this kind of one photograph in the scrapbook. And they don't have any context for what ended up occurring during that event. That's the way the memory system seems to work when it comes to people with autism. And like I said, a lot of the things that we go through in our lives, they generate these filters. So because that filter is there of the experiences, you know, we're looking at it through all of these different memories. And with them, a lot of times what you see happening is that they don't have any context for the filter that they have on them. So they don't have any understanding about what or why they're doing the things that they're doing, essentially. This can be a really difficult situation depending on what is occurring, you know, depending on what is happening around them. So another issue is that when they're in a place or they're in a location and they are hearing everything, seeing everything, feeling everything, smelling everything, their brain has a difficult time getting rid of the excess data that's coming in. And I'm going to get into this stuff more in depth as we go through this episode tonight, but just to give a general idea of things of what I'm saying here, our senses bring in a vast amount of information, and our brain discards 99.9% of that data. So everything that you see, the brain only keeps what it considers to be useful for you at that moment in time. Everything that you hear, the brain discards everything that would not be useful for you at that moment in time. Whatever's necessary, basically, for you to pay attention to is what is kept. The rest is just discarded. Well, with somebody that has severe autism especially, most of the time what ends up occurring is the brain does not discard that sensory information. It is kept and it builds up more and more and more. And they, again, that filter system of the discarding does not occur. And so very swiftly, for someone with autism, that sensory input gets very overwhelming very, very quickly. So in the case of a lot of kiddos that I've known that have autism, you could take them into a place that's very loud or very smelly, or, you know, there's a lot of blinking lights and laser lights and all this kind of stuff that's going on. And within 30 seconds, they're in a meltdown. So that they go through these meltdown processes in order to essentially reset the sensory information that's coming in. It's the brain's way of discarding. So instead of basically them going through a pack of cards and discarding out certain cards that aren't useful and just keeping the hand that they, you know, get dealt by their brain, they're holding on to all 52 cards. And that gets very overwhelming very quickly. So because of that overwhelm, they just throw the whole hand of cards down. All 52 cards go flying all over the place. And now you have this big mess on the floor. Well, that is essentially what a meltdown is. That's what it comes down to. So I'm giving this information out because autism is becoming a very big issue very, very quickly. Before the year 1985 to 86 or so, the number of autistic children just in America alone was about 1 in 10,000. And that number has steadily grown more and more throughout the years. And now it's actually growing at an exponential rate. Since the year 2000, when it was about 1 in 1,000, now, as of the year 2013, which is the last data that the CDC has released, that number is actually 1 in 50. So 1 in 50 children right now are autistic or being diagnosed with something on the autistic pervasive disorder scale. So the projections, if they continue down the path that they're going, are that by the year 2020 or 2025 or so, the number of autistic children are going to be 1 in 2. So that means that half of the people who are born into this world at that point in time will be born autistic. Now, for those of you who have never dealt firsthand with someone who is autistic, I pray that you never have to. It's not a good experience. It's not a fun experience. Okay, let me just put it to you that way. It's very heartbreaking. It's very disheartening to see what they go through. As a parent of an autistic child, I look at my child every day and I see not just the child that's there in the here and now with all of the issues that he has, but I also at the same time see that child that was in the past who was filled with this bright spark and filled with potential and on and on and on, and all of the dreams and all of the wonders and everything that are associated with it are all right there in that moment, every single moment that I look at him. And that's hard to look at. You know, it's hard to see them both together at the same time. It's very heartbreaking for a parent. And to know that there are going to be so many that are going to have to go through this, it really does break my heart. And I want people to understand things from the perspective of someone who has watched their child go through this stuff, so that you can then go through all of the research that you can do to try to discern, how does this happen? Why does this happen? And how can we maybe stop this stuff from happening? And the evidence is out there. The evidence is out there that there are certain things that are occurring that are increasing the likelihood of autism to occur in a child. And again, you can go to my website, openeyesnetwork.com, go into my archives, and you will see a lot of information that's there. I've made a lot available because I've done a lot of research over the years. You know, I mean, when it comes down to it, and I think any parent out there who has ever had a sick child in any way, shape, or form can really attest to this and agree with me on this, that a parent with a child with any kind of disorder, no matter what it may be, is actually more expert on that disorder than any doctor that is out there, because we have done nothing but research that one specific thing. We are more specialized than the specialists that are out there, because this is all we do. We obsess over it. I have spent months and months and months of time researching everything that I can find regarding autism. What does it mean? What does it come down to? What is the cause of it? What kind of things can exacerbate it? On and on and on. Okay. Like I said, it's a matter of us kind of being more expert than the so-called experts out there. So when somebody comes up to us and says that they don't understand, or that they don't believe in the things that we're trying to tell them when it comes to our child who is going through whatever it is that they're going through, it really makes me want to jack slap them upside of their fat freaking mouths, because they have not done the research themselves. They have no clue what it's about. And I hope to God they never have this happen. And I am being very, very honest with that something does not end up occurring that causes them to realize it. You know, the universe works in funny ways sometimes. And I really hope that they never go through this. I really do, because this is not a good thing to have to go through. I did not want to have to spend a lot of years of research into autism and everything that it goes, you know, everything that goes with it. I didn't want this for my son when he was born into this world. I did not want this for him. Now, that being said, I don't regret anything. hold any kind of ill will towards the creator or the universe or anything or anybody for the situation, because everything happens for a reason. That's my full belief on things. You know, everything happens for a reason, and he's here for a reason, and he's going through what he's going through for a reason. Now, I may not understand what those reasons are, but that is my belief. That is my understanding. That is what I hold as being my, the thing that I hold on to the most, I guess you could say. So, again, I wanted to bring this information to you guys just so that you guys can have a good idea for yourselves without having to go through the firsthand experiences of it all. And hopefully you guys understand where I'm coming from with all of this stuff. And you know, if you have any questions, I'm more than happy to answer any kind of questions that people ask. You can just send it to feedback@openeyesnetwork.com, or you can send it to me through Facebook, Open Eyes Network, or Ira Robinson on Facebook and Twitter, on both of those platforms. I'm an open book when it comes to my life. I have nothing to hide, and I have no reason to, and I'm pretty free and open with answering any questions that people want to give me. So you could do that. I'm more than happy to help anybody out understanding things. So with all of that, I also want to make an announcement. Jolene, my wife, and I are actually going to be starting up a show, probably going to start publishing it towards the beginning of May. On our website, Late Night in the Midlands, openeyesnetwork.com, and also going to be on the Late Night in the Midlands radio network. We're not sure what time slot that's going to be yet, but the show is called Adventures in Autism. And what we're going to be doing in that show is basically discussing things like I've been discussing here, giving a firsthand account of kind of our experiences with having an autistic child, the experiences that he's had himself. We're going to have him come on as often as he's willing to come on and talk about things from his own perspective. I think that that's going to be kind of important for people to hear and understand. Excuse me. We're also going to be bringing information as far as what we've found over the years to work best in certain situations, what to do with them with the decision about siblings, how siblings, you know, might help or hinder, and homeschooling, video games. I mean, everything basically that we've gone through with Seth, we're going to lay out for you guys in our show. And sort of each week that we do the show, we're going to bring you something new, like a topic of choice, basically, that you guys can then make use of. Because, you know, autism, again, 1 in 50 kids right now. There's no family that's out there that has not had at least some impact by autism, whether it is through direct family yourselves or through schoolmates or anything like that. It's so prevalent now that there really is no family that hasn't been touched by it somehow. And so we feel that coming at things from a first-hand experience perspective of things is going to help to bring deeper understanding to people and hopefully reveal information for you guys that, basically, like, we've gone through a lot of experiences with Seth, and we found a lot of things that didn't work. And so maybe we can give you the information about what didn't work with ours so that you can maybe decide, hey, maybe that may not be the best track for us to go either. So, you know, I think there's going to be a lot of benefit to it, and we're really looking forward to bringing the show to you guys. So again, that's called Adventures in Autism. And, you know, we named it that because life is an adventure. It really is. And when you have somebody around that's autistic, it's that much more of an adventure. And there is a lot of negative to autism. There really is. I wouldn't wish it on anybody. But there are some positive aspects to it as well. And those are the type of things that we cover on that show. So again, around the 1st of May is when we're going to start broadcasting that out. We're getting the show arranged and ready right now. We've done a few recordings of it. So that I hope that you guys will pay attention to and tune in for, and we'll let you guys know as soon as it starts to launch. You know, I'll let you guys know here on my show, and I'm sure you'll hear me talking about it on the network here and there as well. So look forward to that. Anyways, so with all of these things being said, you know, I didn't want to just bring up the autism topic tonight specifically, but again, that's what led me into the discussion with all of this stuff. There are a lot of things, though, that happen with the brain that most people don't, take for granted, I guess you could say. And I wanted to bring some of them to you guys tonight, because the more you can pay attention to the way that your brain works, the more control you can have over your brain. We've found through science that every decision that we make, every conscious decision that we make, was actually decided anywhere from 6 to 20 seconds before we actually do the thing. So if you, let's say, for instance, are a smoker and you have picked up a cigarette and lit the cigarette, you actually decided to do that 6 to 20 seconds before you actually did it. Your subconscious made the decision for you. Your mind made the decision for you instead of it being a conscious action, you see? And so we think that we decide what is going to go on or what is happening. And in fact, that really may not necessarily be the case. It's done through these decisions that are done on that subconscious level. And it's a very tricky situation. So that's just one example. I'm going to go ahead and take our second break here. And when we come back, we're going to get right into more of the brain and the way that it does us wrong, I think. So stick around with us. We'll be back in just a few minutes.
Have you been looking for answers? Have you been seeking the truth but can't seem to find it? Late Night in the Midlands has the answers for you. Whether you are interested in the paranormal, aliens and UFOs, alternative health information, or just a little hope and inspiration, we have a show for you. Late Night in the Midlands, The Secret Teachings, Open Eyes, Red Pill Reality Show, Brothers at Arms, and many more shows. All here on the L&M Network for you to listen to at any time that you want. Everything is free to listen to. And though it is not required, we are listener supported, and all donations are deeply appreciated. You will not find shows like these in the mainstream media. Go to latenightinthemidlands.com to listen. The L&M Network, where the truth has no fear. The Late Night in the Midlands Radio Network is deeply devoted to you, the listener. We feel it is necessary to bring you all of the information that you can use in your life. Each and every day, you will find something to listen to here. And whether you come away from the shows informed, inspired, or entertained, it is our passion. We don't bow to corporations, and we don't have handlers to tell us what not to talk about. We bring you everything. Late Night in the Midlands, however, is fully listener-supported. We need your help to stay on the air and to make sure that we get the bills paid. We need your help to keep the truth alive. If you feel that you have gotten anything out of Late Night in the Midlands, we would appreciate your support. You can become a subscriber and help us out on a monthly basis, or if you'd like, a one-time donation is fully appreciated as well. Every year, the average household in America spends over $3,000 on entertainment alone. If you could help us with just a tiny fraction of that amount, you would make all of the difference. Go to latenightinthemidlands.com and click on the subscribe button. Thank you, and as always, keep yourself informed.
Brothers at Arms is not about being militant, though there is a time and place where that is necessary. Brothers at Arms is not about arguing, though there are times where things may get heated. Brothers at Arms is not about who is right or wrong. There are many sides to each issue. Brothers at Arms is about exploring those sides, about dealing with the issues facing us today, about coming together and, through opposing views, understanding the deeper truths that are in the middle. Join Ira Robinson and Joe Long each Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on LateNightInTheMidlands.com as these Brothers at Arms discuss what you need to know. Brothers at Arms, it's about time.
Hi, so you're interested in becoming a citizen of the United States. Yeah, I thought I'd at least check it out. Well, welcome. Here in the U.S., ignorance and laziness are prized over an ability to think for yourself and be productive.
Ooh,
where you have freedom. The freedom to choose between Coke or Pepsi, and the beauty is it doesn't matter which you choose because they'll both poison you. Just like the
aspartame.
GMO food that we approve because, well, big agriculture runs our government. This is the United States where conservatives and liberals are power-hungry warmongers and sociopaths and pedophiles, and libertarians are just plain brainwashed. Where we let private central banks of psychopaths print our currency, and, well, the people, they don't even notice because they're too busy spending it on worthless things they don't need. Yes, indeed, the U.S., we liberate nations on a daily basis by spreading democracy. How does that sound so far? Well, now that you put it that way, it kind of sounds terrifying. It sort of sounds like a third world country. Well, all we need to do now is take a small test to determine your knowledge of American history. Can you handle that? Sure. First question, who discovered America? Well, a series of Native American tribes, the Phoenicians, Prince Henry Sinclair. Wrong, it was actually Christopher Columbus who sailed the ocean blue in 1492. Yeah, well, I mean, Mr. Sinclair was actually here in 1392. Next question, what is the Bill of Rights? I mean, it's supposed to be a set of God-given rights that ensure Americans' freedom of speech, press, religion, privacy, without the interference of a government. Ooh, I'm sorry, the answer is actually outdated. Nowadays, we see free speech as a threat to the American freedom, and we rely on the mainstream media as our press, and we frown upon most world religions, and we really just allow the NSA to keep us safe by privately protecting our information. Last question, who is in charge of America? Really a series of corporations, the Royal Crown, international offshore banks, big pharma, big business. Oh, I'm sorry, wrong again. The answer is actually God and the president. Too bad you didn't pass the citizenship test, but you still may be able to be a part of this great nation. You can still apply to become president. No need for a birth certificate or proof of citizenship. All you need to do is download the latest version of Photoshop and you're already halfway to the White House. If you do wish to apply to become an American citizen outside of the legal means, you just have to follow three easy steps. Number one, cross the border illegally. Number two, obtain a minimal paying job illegally. And number three, collect income taxes on money you didn't legally earn or pay taxes on in the first place. The government does all the rest. They even provide you with free health care, housing, education, entertainment, and protection from discrimination. That's right, America the Beautiful, founded by racist, bigots, and fat white land-holding men who saw women and blacks as slaves and property. I think I'm just going to go listen to the secret teachings. Suit yourself. You'll just miss out on the protection America offers from terrorists.
You want the truth? You want the truth?
America does not offer protection from terrorists. The American government is run by terrorists. America is not actually free. America is owned by a handful of royals and banks. The American dream is only achieved by a few and is not for all.
The American dream?
It's still real to me, damn it!
Well, hello there. Welcome back to Open Eyes. My name is Ira Robinson, and I want to thank you guys for sticking around with us. If you guys are enjoying the network, if you guys are enjoying the shows that we've been bringing you, which we bring you a lot of shows at latenightinthemidlands.com, Late Night in the Midlands Radio Network. If you guys enjoy it, if you guys are getting a lot out of it, if you guys are getting any kind of benefit from it, please consider giving a donation or subscribing to the network. This takes a lot of money to run, and you know, we rely completely on the donations of the listeners, of you guys out there. And so in order to keep us afloat, to keep us going, to keep this network alive, we really hate to beg, but you know, it really comes down to that. We really do need the help. So if you guys are willing, please go to latenightinthemidlands.com and click on the subscribe button. And if you can't subscribe, and it's a low cost, it really is dirt cheap. If you don't want to subscribe, just please consider giving a donation of, you know, some sum, whatever you want to give. I mean, everything counts. Every little thing counts. And it's really important and necessary. You know, we don't want to have to go commercial or anything like that. That's what our determination is, you know, that we want to be as much about you guys out there as we possibly can be. That's why we do these shows. That's why we concentrate on the things that we do, because this is information that we feel is important for you guys to have and to understand. There really are a lot of dark things that are going on right now, and we try to do our best to point them out and to shed some light on some very dark subjects. So before I took the break there, I was speaking about the brain and some of the foibles that, I guess you could say, come with having this brain that we have in our heads. And I wanted to go into some of the things that I've discovered over the years about the brain and how it functions and some of the, well, interesting effects that the brain has. So one of the pieces of information that I ran across, you know, and I just thought that this would be, I don't know, I guess interesting information for you guys. And I don't know, to me, it's fascinating. I like the idea of studying the brain. I like the thought that we have in our head, this thing that actually named itself, you know, that alone I find fascinating. And that's kind of mind blowing on a day like today, you know, 420, you know, for those who know what that means. Anyways, so, just kind of things that I've thought were really interesting, I guess you could say, that I ran across. So most neuroscientists who deal with the specifics of the brain actually have estimated the storage capacity of the brain to be anywhere between 10 and 100 terabytes worth of data. They haven't been able to absolutely discern that is what it is, but you know, that's the best guess I guess you could say. Some of them have actually said that it could be up to 2.5 petabytes, which is about 1,000 terabytes worth of information. That's a vast, vast amount of information that can be stored. And the reasoning behind those numbers, I guess you could say, the way that they came up with them, is the brain contains about 100 billion neurons. At least that's what's been estimated. Each of these neurons is capable of making around 1,000 different connections, which represent about 1,000 potential synapses, which that's what essentially does the data storage in the brain. And if you multiply each of those 100 billion neurons by the 1,000 connections that it can potentially make, you get about 100 trillion data points, or about 100 terabytes worth of information. So just to compare, most computer systems that are out today, like a brand new top-of-the-line computer system, likely has on the storage capacity of the hard drive about 1 terabyte worth of data. And you can do a lot of things with 1 terabyte worth of data. Believe me, I know. I've got about 6 terabytes worth of data on my system alone. And I have a lot of stuff. So that's a lot of things that can be stored on it. So the fact that the brain can store anywhere between 10 and 100 of those, it's to me really interesting, you know, how much data basically is stored in this meat suit, in this little computer that we're running around in, basically. And, you know, if you think about things this way, there is a vast amount of information that comes into our brains at every given moment. We have in the normal senses terms of things, we have 5 senses. That's what they talk about the most. We actually have upwards of 20, 25, maybe even 30 senses, you know, that are actually there. But, you know, they kind of congealed everything down into 5. We have sight, taste, smell, touch, you know, all of the 5 senses that we do. Each of those brings about a vast amount of information at any given moment in time. In fact, it's estimated that for each second, over 100 million bytes worth of data come into just our visual cortex alone. Our brain is very efficient at, I guess you could say, deleting data that it considers to be of no use at that moment in time. We've developed this system basically of survival. If you go with the evolutionary type of thing or adaptation type of thing, you know, it's the idea that it's all about survival. And you guys have heard me talk about that before, I am sure, when I've talked about the insane mind and emotional addictions and all of that kind of stuff. You can go into my archives and listen to that if you want more information. Please do. It's really important information, I think. But the brain filters a lot of things out. It's able to disregard a large amount of information. In fact, it's been estimated, if I remember correctly, that we only basically retain about 100 bits of data each second that the brain has considered to be important for our survival at the moment. So if there's no movement in our vision to warn us of a predator that's approaching, or a prey that's approaching, for instance, then most of the visual data is discarded. It's not usable. It's not useful. The same can be said for hearing. When you are sitting there listening to this, for instance, you're not just listening to my voice coming through, but you're also hearing a lot of other things as well. There's the sound of the movement of the wind outside. There is the sound of the house that is settling around you. There is the sound of the mice scurrying around in the walls. There's the sound of the chair beneath you creaking slightly, the desk in front of you creaking slightly, the crackle of the monitor as it's sending out its frequencies, the hard drive in your computer that's running if you're sitting by a computer, on and on. All these different sounds are coming in on a constant basis, and the brain sifts through everything at every given moment and decides what is useful and what is not. And the stuff that is useful is retained. The stuff that is not is tossed away. So at any given moment, you might have, you know, like I said, kind of 100 gigabytes or, you know, 100,000 gigabytes or bits of data that are coming in. but only about 100 are actually retained at any given moment. And out of that 100 is actually where a lot of your memories come from. So when you look back in your memories, for instance, you don't remember every single detail. You just remember the event that ended up occurring. Now, there are some scientists that are out there that think, and I would actually tend to agree with this, that every memory that you've ever had is stored somewhere. Now, they say that it's in the brain. For me, I think of things a little bit differently. If you've, again, listened to any of my shows, you know that sometimes I talk about the universal consciousness field. And the way that I see things interacting with things is that we, in our bodies, we're not the body. We're the consciousness that's inside of the body, or that's you know, controlling the body. The memories are stored in this universal consciousness field, and the brain basically is able to pick out from that field the memories that you want to have access to at that given moment or whatever. And it's a little bit more complex than that, but you know, that's just kind of a real quick and dirty kind of explanation for my viewpoints on things. And I might be thinking a little weird with it. I might be a little off track with it, but you know, they haven't been able to prove exactly what is what and how things function. So I could be right. You know, I could be right. I could be wrong. We don't know for sure. And that's kind of the point. But anyways, so that's kind of the overview of the senses in regards to, you know, how much information is coming in. With the brain itself as well, the brain actually runs on about 12 watts of electricity. So just to toss that out there, our brain functions at the same level or the same amount of electricity that it takes to light some light bulbs out there. In fact, if you were to run a computer as powerful as the human brain, there would be as much as a gigawatt of power needed, which is actually the same amount that is used by all of Washington, D.C. So just to put a comparison on things, the amount of energy that we use in our brains to do everything that we do takes as much energy as it takes to light some light bulbs. But a computer that could do the same amount of processing, the same amount of things that the human brain does, would take a gigawatt worth of electricity to run. So that, I mean, our brains are pretty fascinating. They're very, very high tech, I guess you could say. So some things that I ran across as far as how the brain works and some of the quirks of it. One thing that I ran across that I thought was pretty cool is that if you are a creative person, if you are wanting to do any kind of creative activity, it's actually best to do it when you are tired. You'll have better efficiency when you're tired, when your brain is not functioning at its full capacity, essentially. And this may sound a little weird, but it actually makes sense when you look at the reasoning why it's that way. The reason why is if you're tired, your brain is not as good at filtering out distractions and focusing on like one singular task. It's also less efficient at remembering connections between ideas, you know, so like you go from one idea to another, and you have a more difficult time kind of remembering those connections. And that actually is good when it comes to doing things creatively, because in the creative form, when you're being the most creative, is when it's a lot more free flowing, when it's a lot more open. So if you are having a harder time retaining the connections between ideas, you'll actually have a more efficient time at being creative because of that lack of ability to focus on just one thing. So it allows for more of a, oh, hey, we can go to this, and hey, let's think about this, and oh, wow, let's think about this, you see. And all three of those could have happened at just boom, 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 spontaneously, as opposed to, okay, let's sit down and let's grind out and really think hard about how we want this to work. It makes the intuitive type of thinking a lot more efficient and a lot better or easier, I guess you could say, to come about. And when you're more intuitive, that's when you're more creative. So I thought that was rather interesting. It's somebody that I saw, they compared it to when you take a shower, that's when you tend to have your ideas flowing the best. And that's the truth for me. I get my best ideas when I'm taking a shower or when I'm taking a bath. So for me, it works exactly like that. So I don't know if it's that way for you guys out there. You know, if you happen to be a creative type of person, maybe that's how it is for you. I also found studies over the years that have proved that the brain, the size of your brain actually decreases the more stressed you are. And the reason why I thought this one was really interesting for me is because once in a while I talk about how the dark masters like to keep us, the great unwashed masses, in a state of heightened stress. They constantly keep us worried about this and that, and oh, we have to worry about this war here and this war here, and how am I going to feed my kids next week, and we're all going to lose our minds, we're all going to lose our money, there's constant death and destruction everywhere, and oh my God, we're all stressed out. Well, that has an impact on the actual size of your brain. The more stressed you are for a longer period of time, the less functional your brain is and the less able you are to see any troubles that are going on, the less able you are to think logically and critically about things. And so it may actually be a trait of the stresses that they've been keeping us under that keeps people like me or like Michael Vera or Ryan Gable or Rascala Stefan, keeps us from being able to reach as many people as we would like to do to reveal the information that we want to reveal. You know, it makes me wonder if the reason why is because so many people, especially here in America, are under such constant stress and pressure. And it may be that they're doing that simply to keep people from being able to concentrate on the problems, I guess you could say. So again, I thought that was really interesting, and I wanted to make sure that you guys heard about that, because I don't think many people really realize that these studies have been done that prove that brain size is deeply impacted by stress. And speaking of being able to think straight, we in the great unwashed masses, we're constantly pushed with the idea, especially in the workforce, and especially in the workforces that I've come from, where it's more of a corporate mindset a lot of times, we're told that multitasking is something that you have to do, that you've got to concentrate on all of these different things at once, and you've got to get them all done in a very timely manner or your butt's out. You know, that's just the way it is. But the truth of the matter is that the brain actually cannot multitask. It is impossible for the brain to do any kind of multitasking. Now, you might think that you're multitasking because you're doing multiple things at once, but what you're actually doing is what's called context switching, and that's a different thing. You're able to quickly switch back and forth from one thing to another. You can shift gears basically from one thing to another rather rapidly, but you're not actually multitasking. You can't think of your dog at home and think about your mother calling you at the exact same time. It's the idea that both love and fear cannot exist in the same moment. You can't concentrate on loving somebody if at the same time you're afraid of them, or you're fearing, you're having a fear emotion or whatever. You can't also at the same time feel the other emotion as well. It just, it's impossible to happen. So that's one thing that I think is important to pay attention to and realize is that, you know, a lot of us stress out over the fact that we're basically told that we need to do all of these different things at the same time, and our brains just aren't capable of doing it. So maybe you could use that as an excuse at work. You know, your boss tells you, hey, you need to do this and this and this. And hey, boss, I can only do one thing at once. Let me do this. Let me finish this. I'll make sure this gets done in the best way that I can possibly get it done. And you're going to love it, but don't give me anything else until I'm done with this damn thing. They've actually found that the amount of errors that you do can increase by a factor of even up to 50% if you are trying to do two things at once. So yeah, you can tell your boss, hey, this is just the way it has to be. And at the same time, you can tell them that sleep is very important for our brains as well. And it's actually recommended by a lot of neuroscientists that we take naps every day. Even if it's a short one, like a half hour, just a half hour nap, you will find yourself actually working with improved memory, improved efficiency, more of a ability to think critically, think logically, think rationally. And I know that the people out there who know me very well are right now saying, see, we tell you, you should get some sleep. Thank you. I'm okay. I'm okay, really. sorry, I've had a lot of people telling me that I need to get more rest lately. Anyways, so this goes into the idea that I've always expressed. I've said for many years that if the federal government wants to really do something for the people, what they need to do is institute a national nap time during every work schedule. Just a 15-minute power nap. You know, you go through 4 hours of work, you take your hour of lunch, and then you take a 15-minute nap, and then you go right back to work for another 3 hours and 45 minutes. That right there is your day. You know, I mean, it's, I think that it would be great because, I mean, I've noticed if you even just take a nap for about 15 minutes, you actually are refreshing yourself almost as much as if you slept for 8 hours. It's that much of a really big pusher for you. Now, granted, that may not last a real long time. You know, you can't live on 15 minutes worth of naps, but you can still get a lot more efficiency and a lot more functionality out of your brain if you were to just do these little power naps. Now, you don't want to sleep for more than 15 minutes, and you don't want to sleep, you know, you don't want to get into that deep, deep sleep, because if you get shifted into that phase of sleep and it's interrupted, it's actually harder on your body at that point. So, you know, just the little power naps or go for the whole thing, you know, do one or the other, just a little 15 minute or go for the whole 6 or 7 or 8 hours, whatever it is that you normally get every night. So, I'm a big proponent of the idea of power napping at work. And one of the things that I was talking about earlier was the visual cortex and how it has the ability to take in all of this information. It is actually, out of all of the senses, it's the one that has the most impact on us. And I kind of know this actually from personal experience because I'm blind. You know, now for those of you who may not know what my blindness is, it's called keratoconus. It's it's a genetic defect in my eyes that instead of being egg-shaped, my corneas are actually more of a pyramid-shaped. And when I look out of my eyes, it's more like I'm looking through a kaleidoscope all the time. And there's the shiftings and weird warpings and all of this kind of stuff. It's literally, it's like it's all jumbled up. It's a jumbled up mess. And my problem is actually too much information. My brain can't interpret what's coming through the visual cortex, you know, through my corneas into the visual cortex. It can't process it properly because there's just too much weird information that goes on with it. And my eyes, every time I blink, they shift slightly. So when I blink, my eyes, like, you know, how you normally blink up to 30, maybe even 40 times per minute for a lot of people out there. Every single time that I blink, my eye actually gets misshapen and it has to take a couple of seconds to reassert itself into the shape that it has become accustomed to doing. So every time that I blink, my vision goes completely wacko. And it'll be wacko for a couple of seconds afterwards. And then on top of that, you have all the other issues that come with having a pyramid-shaped cornea instead of the egg-shaped cornea. And between it all, basically, it renders me blind. I really can't see much of anything past about 2 or 3 inches in front of my face. Anything beyond that, and it's anybody's guess as to who it is or what it is, I really cannot see somebody's face if they're standing in front of me. It looks like a melted wax figure or something like that. That's what the whole world looks like to me at this point in time. So saying all of that, the reason why I bring that up is because I have personal experience when it comes to issues with the vision and the things that the brain does when it comes to vision. And vision really is sort of everything when it comes to the senses and how your brain deals with things. There's an experiment that is able to be done where basically you can look at a picture, for instance, and hear somebody say a word, and the visual of it will actually override the word that is being said. There's actually this one is interesting. There's an experiment that was done with wine tasters, and they have been known to describe a dyed white wine as being red. And the reason why this is done is because the glass that is used during this, or, you know, while drinking this particular wine, actually causes the eye to think that it's a red wine, but it's actually a white wine. And the brain basically fools itself. So somebody can say that it's a white wine, but because your vision says that it's a red. it's really interesting. And the visual information, I guess, also goes into the way that our memories work. If you hear something, you know, somebody tells you a story or something like that, for instance, you might remember things about 10% of the time. As a general rule, if somebody tells you something, if you're hearing something, so you're hearing this conversation here, you're only going to end up retaining about 10% of the conversation. However, if visual things are used in association with it, you'll remember up to 65% of it. And that is just the way that the brain works in conjunction with our vision to give more of an oomph to things, I guess you could say. So for those of us who have a lot of visual problems, we have to work that double hard, I guess you could say, at doing everything that we do, because we don't have that visual impetus to make our memories better. We don't have that visual cueing to be able to retain things better. So, you know, in the end, us blind people are actually smarter. Hey, I gotta plug myself, right? And, you know, even if I'm mistaken on that, that'll make me more likable. That actually is part of an experiment that was done that has been found that people who make mistakes, another foible of the brain, people who make mistakes are more likable to people than those who never make any mistakes. And it's called the pratfall effect. It literally, that's the name of the idea with this. It goes into the thought that those who make mistakes about things, you can look on them as being more like yourself, because we're always so critical of ourselves. We always think that we're doing wrong, that we're doing bad, that things, you know, we didn't do perfect there. We're always our own worst critics. And so when you see somebody else making mistakes, you'll actually be more forgiving of them as a general rule, and you'll actually like them more as a general rule, because you look upon them as being more like yourself. So they act sort of as a mirror reflection to yourself, and so therefore you'll find them more appealing to you, I guess you could say. That it's an odd one, but it really is the truth. And I know I've found that by looking through my memories of things when I was doing my research for this topic tonight, by looking through my memories of things, I can see where that kind of thing has actually affected me on a personal level, where I've seen, you know, in my life, people that have been prone to make mistakes. It's like, yeah, I liked that guy. He was a really cool guy. And those who act like they have never made any mistakes at all, I tend to look at as being snobby and egotistical and on and on and on. So, and they may not necessarily be, but that's the way that my brain has warped the perceptions of that person and essentially made them into that. And of course, perception is everything. We all know that. Whatever we're perceiving is the end all and be all of that moment. So speaking of the end all and be all of that moment, another interesting thing with the brain, and one that I think a lot of my listeners are going to be attracted to, the idea of it, is the idea that meditation has a huge amount of really good benefits. It literally has the power to rewire the brain in ways that are extremely beneficial all around. It makes you have a better memory. It makes you have less anxiety. It makes you be more patient with people, less angry with people, less knee-jerky with people. You tend to be a lot smarter, a lot more critically thinking, a lot more logical. All of these things happen in people who are more apt to do meditation. Now, meditation, let me make one thing clear. Meditation is not necessarily sitting in a cross-legged fashion saying Om, although that is one aspect of meditation. But meditation is more in the more purified form of it, just sitting quietly and doing your best to think of nothing at all. It's that moment in time where you are living in the moment, that you are not concerned about the future, giving up the past, and you're just there for that moment with no emotional attachment whatsoever, as released from your mind as you can be. And unfortunately, a lot of people, when they try to do that, the first thing that happens to them is they fall asleep. But That's what meditation is in its kind of purest, most boiled down form. That's what it all comes down to. The other things, the, again, sitting cross-legged, you know, chanting Om and that sort of thing, those are extraneous things that are used as more as a focal thing, you know, to get into that frame of mind or in that frame of meditation. But when it comes down to it, if you are able to just sit quietly for a moment or two, that right there is meditation. And that alone is very beneficial for us, at least according to every study that has been done on the subject. And there have actually been quite a few of late that have been done. And to me, I find that topic fascinating. I mean, these are things that a lot of people have espoused about meditation over the years, and mainstream science has poo-pooed all over it. But now they're coming out and saying, oh yeah, there actually is something to this. It's the way science works, right? It's the way that all science ends up going. It always goes through three stages. I can't remember who it is that came up with this idea, but I love it. The three stages are that of any new scientific idea or new scientific theory is that the first one, the first reaction or the first stage of scientific reaction to these new ideas is to deny it and make fun of it all the way around. It's impossible. Could never happen. The next stage is that it is not useful. That, okay, yes, it's we understand this, but it's not useful. Where can we apply this today? And then the last stage is, well, of course it's there. Of course it's true. It's always been true, and we've always accepted it that way. You know, that's the way that science works. And it's that way we've found now a lot of times when it comes especially to this study of the brain, of consciousness, of all of the different things. You look at the meditation, so many studies have been done over the years, and they all say, oh no, this is not useful at all. There's nothing to it. But now they're coming out and saying, yes, there is actually something that's to it, and it's true. We've been wrong all along. And it's just a sad statement. You know, it really is. So those are some things that I found that I thought you guys might find to be really interesting. We don't know a lot about the brain. We don't know a lot about even our lives, what it means to be human, what it means to have the history that we've had. There are a lot of things that are deeply hidden from us, and there are a lot of things that are not necessarily hidden from us, maybe intentionally, but a lot of things that science tries to claim that it understands and really honestly has no clue about. And the brain, I think, is one of the biggest ones. And that's sad because that is, you know, the biggest organ that we have, and it's the most important one, I guess, besides the heart, which, you know, kind of drives everything along. So anyways, I hope that you guys enjoyed this episode tonight. I put a lot into it, and I hope that you guys got a lot out of it. It's a topic that really fascinates me, and I could talk about it endlessly. And in fact, I had a lot more to talk about, but of course, out of time. Always, always, always out of time. So guys, if you want to go to the show notes for this show, I'll have the links to the articles that I talked about in this episode and all the other things as well. Go to openeyesnetwork.com/OE096. If you want to send me an email, you can send it to feedback@openeyesnetwork.com. And if you want to go to my Facebook or Twitter pages, those are at Open Eyes Network and Ira Robinson on both of those. On Wednesday, I'm going to talk about patriotism, nationalism, and all the other isms that go with that. And I think you guys are going to get a lot out of that one as well. Be sure to tune in. That will be on Wednesday, April 22nd at 7 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time, airing live on latenightinthemidlands.com. And it will be available as well on my own website, openeyesnetwork.com. So with that, keep safe out there, guys, and have fun. And thank you so much, as always, for listening.
Thank you.